Hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of Tantra's Mantra, where we go behind and beyond the tech news headlines. I'm your host Prakash Sangam, founder and principal at Tantra Analyst. Now, just a few days ago, Intel had an elaborative event that they called IFS Direct Connect. IFS here stands for Intel Foundry Services. This was first such event for their foundry business, and they dubbed it as a coming out party. Event was primarily for their foundry customers, partners, and select analysts. Some part of the event was also open for media. The event was impressive, at least I thought, with walk-ons and presentations from their key customers and partners. I was especially impressed with the amount of details they provided in terms of their strategy, proof points, roadmap, and so on, which was not the case before with Intel specifically. There was quite a bit of information to digest and analyze, and it was pretty clear that Intel has some major challenges to address and large opportunities in front of them, especially even if a small portion of all the hype around AI becomes real, right? That will be a huge opportunity for all semi players, including Intel. So to discuss all of that, I have a special guest with us today, and that is Bob O'Donnell, President and Chief Analyst at Tech Analysis Research. We both attended the event. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Prakash. Happy to be here.
Bob and I have known each other for a long time, going back to my days at Qualcomm. Delighted to have you on the show, Bob.
Yeah, thank you, Prakash. Yes, we have known each other a long time. I know I was thinking about that before we started. I was like, boy, I've known Prakash for a while. So, and you successfully made the transition from industry to analyst, and I'm sure you're enjoying it just as I am.
Yeah, so far so good. Yeah, I'm really loving it.
That's great.
All right. So I'm sure many of our listeners know you and the work you do and so on. But still be great to get a quick overview of your background and what markets you cover at or Technalysis.
Sure. So yeah, I've been a tech industry analyst for almost 25 years at this point. Oh. Prior to that, I did computer press. I was associated with various computer publications, and then the online versions of those publications. Then I started working at IDC in 1999, July of 99. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 14 and a half years. And while I was there, I ended up taking over all of the device research. So PCs, tablets, smartphones, and started the wearable research. Cool. Then in 2013, I decided I wanted to branch off on my own. And so I started Technalysis Research in December of 2013. And so just celebrated my 10th anniversary. I was an independent analyst. And I absolutely love it. It's been fantastic. And I've moved on from just devices, which of course I continue to cover, to the supply chain for those devices, namely semiconductors. And it's everything from EDA folks like Cadence and chip makers like Global Foundries, as well as, of course, all the major chip designers like the Intels, AMDs, Qualcomms, et cetera, of the world. And then other folks in the telecom space I've jumped into as well. So all the U.S. carriers, people like Cisco, Samsung Networks, and then big tech companies like Microsoft and IBM, Samsung, and a bunch of others. So cover a lot of area, and of course, lately, generative AI, which I know we'll get into when we talk about this. And I like to kind of dive in and then look for all the connections across these areas. Mm-hmm. So the reason I went independent was to be able to tell stories that worked across all of these different areas, as opposed to when you're at a big firm, you get limited to just talking about your very specific area. And that was too limiting for me. So that's why I did what I did.
And it's all one large ecosystem, right? There is so much of crossover nowadays, right?
Yes, exactly.
Indeed. And congrats on completing 10 years.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, sure. So let's jump into the question. So, I talked about the Intel Foundry event. What was your, impression? What are some of the takeaways from your point of view?
Yeah, I know. I thought it was a great event. Like you said, I think you did a nice job of describing and setting it up. They did get into a lot of detail. And, mm-hmm. there's a couple of things. Remember that mm-hmm. when Gelsinger took over a couple years ago, Pat Gelsinger, the CEO of Intel, he made a vow to said, hey, we need to get back to being a leader. I mean, for a good portion of my career as an analyst, Intel was always the leader in terms of process technology and capabilities and performance on the semiconductor side, and they lost it.
Yep.
So they've been working to try and get back to that leadership position or somewhere near that.
Mm-hmm.
And he set out a very huge goal, frankly, the five nodes in 4 years discussion, you know, and the idea is that they would increment through five different nodes in 4 years. And that's crazy because he was also talking about the idea that Intel used to have was called TikTok. And TikTok was basically, you know, 1 year they would do a improvement in the node. They'd shrink it down from, you know, 45 nanometers down to 28 nanometers or whatever it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year they would stay at that same size, but they would make improvements to the chip.
Correct.
To the design and architecture.
Yeah.
So to do five nodes in 4 years is like would have in the past would have taken Intel 10 years to do that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's been a lot of questions. Could they really do that? Where were they on that? Where were they going to go next? And oh, by the way, did the market actually really care by getting customers? And that's how you, you know, you can prove that. And to your point, I think they did a good job of laying out the vision of, hey, here's where we are. We're about halfway through. You know, they're about on the third node of five. They've been laying out number four, and they talked quite a bit about number five, which is 18A. They're 18 angstroms or 1.8 nanometer, depending on how you want to measure.
Yeah, and that kind of tells a story, right? How the semiconductor industry itself has progressed, right? It used to be whatever Intel did, but now everybody passed them, and the speed of innovation is so fast that you miss a, you know, one node or you miss one generation, then you are far behind, right?
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. And that's why, you know, Gelsinger came back and you know, he, as for those who don't know, he has a long history at Intel. That's where he started. He started working at Intel when he was 18 years old.
Yeah.
And he worked there for a very long time, then left and ended up running VMware. And then he came back and he seemed like the perfect guy. And I still think he is to move Intel into the future because of the history there and his incredible technical expertise and knowledge. And so, you know, he set a very ambitious goal and they're doing a pretty good job so far. And the question will be, can they keep it going? You know, because I think another thing, important thing to remember is we talk about all these chip companies, AMD and Intel and Qualcomm and NVIDIA.
Correct.
But there's one huge difference between Intel and all the rest of them, which is Intel also makes the chips because none of the other guys do.
Correct.
Right? They all depend on outside foundries like TSMC in Taiwan and UMC and Samsung and all these other companies. Intel is, you know, one of the few that designs and builds chips. And that's been tough to do. And there were some people who said, oh, they should sell off the foundry business and just do design like the other guys do or what have you. But they've managed to make it work. And I think they're trying to do something interesting with this. Now, the other thing is we have to talk a little bit about history. As I know you know this.
Yeah.
Intel's tried this before. This is not the first time they've done this. This is actually the third time. And they never made it work before. This time they're really going out of their way to make it happen. And you know, I think they're, you know, there are some interesting metrics that they mentioned that suggest that they are moving in that direction.
Yeah, and also, I mean, there are questions on you know, firewalling between the two businesses, whether their foundry customers will believe that they get priority or at least, you know, treated equally with their internal customers for the chips. But going back to your mention of big goal that they have set up for themselves, being number two in foundry by 2030, probably behind TSMC, which means kind of beating Samsung, right? Which is another big gorilla that they have to fight with. So I know that indeed is a tall order. Looks like they're making good progress. So, you know, what is your view on it? On so far, what we have seen since Gelsinger came back, how has been their progress?
It's a great question, Prakash. I mean, I think they're getting there, right? I mean, they still have a long way to go, to be clear.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the whole reason for doing this is they realized as the foundry, they needed to build more than just their chips. They didn't have enough chips and enough orders for their only Intel chips to make the foundry work. They had to get business from other customers, and that's what they're doing at the foundry. Good. So it all boils, and ironically, of course, they also determined that some chips they want, they were going to actually have to have other companies build, at least for a while. Eventually, I'm sure they want to move it all back. But so the metric is, who are the customers? Who are the other companies that are starting to, and more importantly, how much are they doing? They don't always disclose who their customers are. There's a lot of privacy involved with that. They have talked about a few of them, and I know we can talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
But I had, I was very fortunate. Intel gave me the opportunity to interview Gelsinger right before the event. And I wanted to get a sense from him, you know, how, why is it going to be different this time? And his, you know, he pointed out, he said, look, our booked business is already significantly larger than we ever did in the previous ones. So to me, that was a pretty important metric to say, okay, it is, you know, it's starting to hit home. The other thing we have to bring into all this discussion, of course, is there's a whole new set of geopolitical angles to the chip making business that didn't exist before. You know, I mean, they did exist. It's just that everybody was ignoring them. During the pandemic, when people couldn't get chips for cars and some other things, all of a sudden the world woke up to the fact that, you know, those of us who've been tracking the semiconductor industry have known for a long time that we were in trouble because 90% plus percent of the world's most advanced chips were all being built in Taiwan. You know, and not only is Taiwan being challenged politically by China and threats of invasion, but it lives, it sits on the Ring of Fire where there's all kinds of earthquakes and everything else and natural disasters. So chips are so important now to everything that we do in this world. Why are they all, you know, focused in this one area? You have to build them other places. And so Intel's taking advantage of that. There's government interest and government money to fund this. And that's another reason behind, you know, Gelsinger's move to build this foundry business out.
Yeah, indeed. I think, and the timing wise, it's perfect, right? I mean, you know, deep pockets that US has and large semi companies being here are a huge positive for them, right? So, I mean, in my view, for them to really make this happen, they have to get significant portion of the US semi players, be it Qualcomm, Apple, and others to their roster, right? To make that happen. And I think, you know, Microsoft being there, having a walk on, Satya Nadella coming and saying they are committed to building their chips, didn't disclose which chips, but with Intel, I think that was a good point in time for them at the event, right? And there was MediaTek, which is a huge chip player in the in the smartphone side. Broadcom was there on the stage as well.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think they 100% committed to using Intel, but they being there itself gives a good indication that they are interested. And you know, if Intel comes through with their 18A process node with good yield and so on, you know, they're ready to use them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, as you said, you know, the biggest question going into the event was, would Intel have some real customers on stage with them? And and most notably, would there be any interesting surprises? They've talked about, there's been discussions about MediaTek and Broadcom before, so that wasn't a huge surprise. And they even had a few hints about ARM, but the Microsoft one was a complete shock, right? And as you said, there were no details, but Microsoft has already said, look, we want to build custom AI accelerators. And you know, a couple other chips as well. So there's a good chance that Intel could be winning that business, which is huge and means a lot. And, you know, there's been rumors of Qualcomm. There's been rumors of NVIDIA. There's been rumors of a number of other companies. And again, in that foundry business, it's not, people don't always say who their customers are. That's kind of a thing. So you have to sort of accept that that's the case. But, you know, Intel's trying to say, look, not only can we, do we have the manufacturing capacity, but they made a big point to differentiate themselves from others by saying, look, we're a system foundry. And of course, at first everybody was like, well, what does that mean? Right. So one of the other things I got to talk to Gelsinger about was to try and explain that more. And his point is, look, when you're designing a chip, there's, especially nowadays when we're in the era of chiplets and multiple chip components, you have to have important capabilities beyond being able to build one great super advanced tiny chip, how do you connect them together? How do you provide power to all these things? What sorts of IP do you need to connect all these pieces together? So it's really sort of the system foundry idea is sort of a chiplet foundry or a chiplet system foundry, sorry. Meaning his point is, look, we have all this advanced packaging technology, which a lot of people do acknowledge Intel has a lead in.
Correct.
To connect all these pieces together. We have interconnect technology. We have a lot of experience in putting different elements together. And that's where things start to get interesting. And that's why I think you've got companies saying, oh, okay, this is interesting. Because even if they get one of their more advanced node, you know, chiplet pieces from another vendor, they may ship that part to Intel and have other parts built by Intel and then the whole package put together. And that is where I think we're going to see them initially start to get some success and then build from there over time. And that is where that's sort of that unique secret sauce that I think Intel is trying to bring to the equation.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they talked about being system foundry all throughout the event, right? And how big a differentiation you think that is? Because if you look at Samsung, TSMC, they also kind of... similar capabilities, not to the extent that Intel has, but for example, Samsung Foundry yesterday came up with their backside powering kind of thing that Intel also talked about, right? Which improves the efficiency, improves the board area and so on. So is that a huge long-term differentiation for them or is it more time-bound before TSMC and Samsung also develop similar expertise?
It's a great question. You know, all of these things are time bound to some degree, right? Everybody's constantly building new innovations. And oftentimes, look, it's a question of degree, right?
Yep.
Maybe Intel's is, you know, everybody has it, but Intel's in this particular area is 10% better or whatever. You know what I mean? And I'm making up numbers. But the point is, I do think they are generally perceived as having a lead in areas around packaging and with the growing interest in chiplets, that gives them some advantages that, of course, obviously TSMC has some of those capabilities. They have plenty of IP and so does Samsung. And you're right, the power via stuff to power from the backside of the chip that Intel talked about, other companies are going to start to have that too. But, you know, can Intel stay ahead with some of those things? Can they convince their customers? And again, to be honest with you, sort of from a geopolitical and psychological perspective, do companies want to diversify their manufacturing? And I think that they do. And that's a huge advantage for Intel. Even if Intel stuff is only just as good as the other guys, they have the benefit, as you pointed out, for certainly for the US semiconductor suppliers to say, hey, you know what? If I'm Qualcomm or I'm somebody else, I want to have some of my chips built by Intel because A, their factories are in places where, you know, it's safer. And perhaps wouldn't be involved with, you know, God forbid, a war in Taiwan if China invades or something horrific like that. Mm-hmm. So companies need to think about those things. And if Intel gets to the point where they're equally as good, that's an advantage to them as well.
Yeah, and also, I mean, apart from providing huge subsidies and the funding to Intel for building foundries in the country, U.S. government has some sort of influence over larger US semi players. I mean,
absolutely.
If push come to shove, they can, not arm twist exactly, but can influence the US companies to use Intel, as long as the performance is at par, right?
They can encourage.
So I think that's a huge, huge positive for Intel. I think a lot depends on how good they deliver on 18A node, right?
Right.
So even, you know, Pat has been on record saying, he's betting the farm on 18A execution. And, you know, good thing is they mentioned it's on track. What do you think? I mean, how good 18A is coming? A good, successful 18A launch and delivery is key to everything that they're talking about, right?
I mean, absolutely, right? I mean, with all the interest in AI accelerators and everything else that needs this super small, you know, node size, you know, I think 18A is critical. And they see it as, and oh, by the way, 18A is when they think they actually take over as leading the market. So, you know, it gives a huge flag for them to wave to say, hey, we're back in front again.
Correct.
So that's why the 18A thing is such a big deal, because it finally allows them to catch back up and get ahead of the other guys if they can maintain the schedule that they said they were going to.
Yep.
And again, like you said, they seem to be, I mean, how well they do it, I don't know. You and I are not going to know until those chips start coming out.
Indeed, yeah.
But it certainly feels like it's coming along pretty well. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing you mentioned briefly, ARM. I mean, having ARM there is a big deal. Think about all the companies that use ARM, you know, as part of their designs.
Yeah.
And so to have Rene Haas, the CEO of ARM, come out there and talk about them working with that, that makes it significantly easier for all the ARM ecosystem to work with Intel. So that the beauty of bringing in ARM is it's not one company, it's like 100 companies.
Yeah.
So that potential is also very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, if they do well on ARM, then they don't have to worry about their fabs being idle at all, right? It brings huge amount of business at all different levels of you know, tiers and levels of price points. So that will be a huge deal if they can pull it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you know, AI, you know, we talked a little bit. I kept it towards the end because otherwise we would be talking about AI all the time, right? So right now, AI, most of the AI runs, and a lot of it is on training. I agree that runs on GPUs coming from just this one company. And every semi player out there is banking on this being big and they taking share and, you know, supporting all this huge need for AI. I mean, I'm sure there is a lot of hype. Even a small portion of all that forecasted hype turns into reality, I think there'll still be a huge market even for Intel. What's your view on, you know, where the AI is headed? Obviously, with a lot of training right now, it's NVIDIA leading it. As it moves on to inference workloads, then there'll be, you know, multitude of processes be needed. TPU could be a key player. I think that's a market that Intel can fancy to lead or get at least a significant portion of, right?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, and, you know, the beauty of what's happening with AI, as far as Intel's concerned, at least from their foundry business, is, look, if they can make CPUs and GPUs and TPUs, it's going to be the combination of all of those packaged together.
Yeah, as a system foundry, yeah.
As a system.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the logic behind what they're doing. But, you know, look, we're going to see evolution of GPUs. We're going to see evolution of, you know, CPUs actually still do most of the inferencing workloads in the world. People don't realize that, but that's true.
Yeah.
So CPUs are critically important. We're seeing more and more TPUs obviously being involved. But to some degree, I mean, look, the Intel chip design side has to worry about catching up and keeping up. But the Intel foundry side of the business, whichever type of chip wins is fine with them, because they could theoretically build them all. So at least that's the logic behind, you know, what they're trying to do and convincing companies to build with them as a trusted partner.
Indeed. So the last question. So, you know, they talked about this firewall between their chip as well as the foundry business. How is that working out? Do you think customers are either believing in or in the future believe that they can maintain this firewall and their chip business doesn't get preferential treatment when it comes to fab and so on?
Again, I had a chance to ask Gelsinger this directly, and he made it clear they are structurally dividing the company. They are making sure, because they know if they don't do this, they are doomed to fail as a foundry.
Yeah.
So there's no question that he is in reinforcing that. He's separating people, separating groups. It's already started to happen. And all signs are that they are extraordinarily serious about it, because they know that is a make or break issue.
Yeah, indeed. So, I mean, we can keep talking about this topic for a very long time. I think we covered quite a lot of ground. Any closing comments?
Look, I think we're in very interesting times. And again, what's fascinating about this whole Intel Foundry thing, and frankly, the semiconductor manufacturing in general, is, you know, what I hinted at earlier. I mean, the entire world is so utterly dependent on chips. You know, chips are the new oil, chips are new, whatever you want to call it, right? There's all kinds of analogies that have been made. But they're absolutely essential. And governments around the world want local supply of these. And that means they're willing to spend money to do that. So that opens up a lot of interesting opportunities. And Intel, as a large global international player based in the US, has a huge advantage over a lot of other companies in that regard. And I think they're going to take advantage of it. And I think that's going to help them in the long run.
All right, Bob, thank you very much for all of your insight. You know, as I said, we can keep talking about for a very long time. Thank you for, you know, very engaging and interesting insights that you provided to our listeners. I think as we discussed, 18A delivery is going to be key, and we both will be very closely following how Intel does there and, you know, on the roadmap beyond that. Again, thank you for coming over to Tantra's Mantra.
Happy to do it. Thanks, Prakash. Enjoyed being here.
Thank you. So folks, that's all we have for now. Hope you found this discussion informative and useful. If so, please hit like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you listen this on. Don't forget to check our other podcasts and articles. I'll be back soon with another episode, putting light on another exciting tech subject. Bye-bye for now.